Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Osprey Medical Quarterly Results Investor Call. All parties are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Mike McCormick, President and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to Osprey Medical's quarterly results call for the period ending the 30th of June, 2019. I'm joined on this call by Nancy Ness, Osprey's CFO. Earlier today, Osprey released its Appendix 4C for the second quarter of 2019, and I'd like to update you on the results and the growth of our business throughout the quarter. Before diving into the details, I wanted to give you a quick summary of the key highlights for the quarter, and it was a very solid quarter for Osprey. Divert unit sales were up 64% over prior corresponding period, with quarter-on-quarter growth accelerating to 18% versus Q1 of 2019. Our GPO-based unit sales grew by 162% versus a prior corresponding period, and the GPO sales were 67% of Osprey's overall Divert sales. Quarterly revenue hit $1 million for the first time in our history in a quarter, and that was up 56% versus prior corresponding period. Net cash operating burn for the quarter was $3.8 million, which was down 25% versus Q1 of 2019. And our closing cash balance was $16.3 million in U.S. currency as of the 30th of June, 2019. It was a very successful commercial period for Osprey, and it marked our 19th consecutive quarter of revenue growth since we started commercializing in the United States. Our core commercial strategy of a direct sales force remains unchanged. We feel it's the best way to introduce new technologies like the Divert that fills an unmet clinical need, like taking coronary angiograms, which is a common heart procedure, and making that safer for patients with poor kidney function. Introducing new medical devices into the market is certainly not automatic, but we're proud of our 19 quarters of growth and the acceleration that we saw in the second quarter of 2019. We're also very excited about the sales team that we have in place, including sales reps, clinical specialists, and sales managers that will drive our future growth. For the remainder of my comments, I will detail the accomplishments of the direct sales force in the quarter and highlight key programs like our GPO contracts that are aimed at driving future growth. Some of the key numeric results for the second quarter in units is they would have very strong unit sales growth, stable selling prices, and strong cash conversion. Divert unit sales in the second quarter were at 2,922 units, which was up 64% versus prior corresponding period and 18% quarter-on-quarter. When you look at all the units that we sell, which includes obviously the Divert, but also Ditect and syringes, in the second quarter we were at 3,188 units, which was up 63% versus prior corresponding period. The Divert Plus EZ, which is a product that we launched in Q4 of 2018, continues to show strong market acceptance. In the quarter, it represented 77% of Osprey's Divert unit sales. As of the end of Q2, we had 147 hospitals who had purchased the Divert system, and that was up 19% versus prior corresponding period. We continue to have our sales force focus on driving deeper penetration in open accounts, and that was demonstrated by the 93% of our revenues coming in the quarter were from existing accounts, with 7% coming from brand new accounts. With our GPO contract, we've directed our sales force to focus on new hospitals who are members of the contracted GPOs. At the end of the second quarter, we had 26 hospitals in the sample to purchase pipeline, which reflects a strong pipeline of future customers for Osprey. In terms of revenues, gross revenues for the quarter were at $1 million, which was up 56% over prior corresponding period. Net revenues, post payments to the GPOs, which are up to 5%, were at $994,000 in the quarter. Our U.S. selling price prior to GPO fees for the Divert remains stable at $354. For the last 3 years, the price has been stable between $350 and $360 for the Divert product. Cash receipts were at $990,000 in the second quarter, which was up 65% versus the prior corresponding period. Net cash used in operating activities of $3.8 million was a decrease of 25% versus trailing quarter and a 10% decrease versus prior corresponding period. We ended the quarter with a strong balance sheet and no debt. In the United States, in U.S. currency, we had $16.3 million as of the 30th of June, 2019. And now turning to GPOs, in calendar year 2018, many of you will remember that we previously announced that we had four contracted relationships with multiple hospital systems called GPOs. In November of last year, we announced a GPO contract with Premier, one of the largest GPOs in the United States. As previously advised to the market, securing GPO agreements has been a part of our growth strategy for Osprey, and during the quarter, unit sales from all products attributable to GPO contracted hospitals was 1,741 units. That was up 162% versus prior corresponding period. And these sales to GPOs represented 67% of Osprey's total sales versus 39% in the prior corresponding period. The company anticipates growth to continue from new and existing hospital accounts associated with contracted GPOs throughout the remainder of 2019 and beyond. And finally, a couple of comments about our sales force. In the quarter, we had 18 sales reps and 8 clinical specialists, which were focused on expanding our business. The effectiveness of this 26-person customer-facing sales force continues to improve with average sales per rep field performance at 123 units, which was up 44% to prior corresponding period, which was at 85 units. This gives you a quick overview of our results for the second quarter and the growth strategies for future quarters. I would now like to open the call to any questions from those on hold.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Steve Wien, Evans and Partners. Go ahead, please.
I just want to start with the cash flows. Quite an impressive reduction in the cash burn. So, the sustainability of that, what does it look like, and what other factors other than increasing sales might be driving it?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. On cash burn, good question. It was a reduction in cash burn. Normally, our first quarter is one of our bigger quarters in cash burn because our internal employees' bonuses are in that time frame. However, as many people might remember from last quarter, we also commented that we had an increase in manufacturing costs associated with a new product, the iPad, that was going to replace our legacy monitor. And so we did not have those single one-time and recurring expenses. We do anticipate our cash burn to continue to decline as sales revenues grow and as we become more efficient with our internal structure as well as our sales force.
So is there any specific manufacturing efficiencies that might occur from here on in that you can point to in the shorter term?
Yeah, the biggest efficiency was last quarter we did spend quite a bit to buy the iPads. The other efficiency that we're bringing online is, as many of you may know, we have circuit boards in some of our componentry, and we continue to source that from from great suppliers, but the price is competitive and continues to go down. So that also is aiding in reducing our cash burn.
Okay, great. There also seems to suggest, based on the numbers that you've quoted in terms of unit sales, that there's sales outside of the U.S. Is that correct, and can you sort of talk to some of those geographies?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. We do have sales outside of the United States. We have sales in two countries outside of the United States, Italy and in the UK. And I'll explain what's the focus in those two countries and what are we trying to accomplish. So first off, with Italy, the reason that we went to Italy is we went there because we're using a distributor organization as opposed to a direct sales organization. And when you use a distributor organization, it's different in how you sell through them, how we as an organization teach, train, all of our marketing tools. We wanted to make sure that we understand what are the keys to training a distributor organization and then making sure that they get pulled through within the country of Italy. The reason why we chose Italy is Italy actually is one of the physicians there published quite a bit on contrast-induced acute kidney injury, so it was a natural market for us to go to. We've been pleased with the early experience in Italy. We've learned a tremendous amount about marketing with a independent sales organization, and we've been pleased with the commercial uptake in that market. It's still small. It's immaterial compared to the overall sales units that Osprey has. But it is fueling for us a very nice education platform for when we roll out more aggressively throughout Europe with a distribution organization. And now turning to the UK, our efforts in the UK are much more focused. We are working to get NICE approval in the UK. NICE approval, we believe, is something that we'll be able to attain because it's very much like getting a GPO agreement in the United States. They have the exact same things that they look for, that the GPOs look for. They look for an incredibly strong value proposition that demonstrates that you're going to improve outcomes and lower hospital costs. And so we believe that we'll be successful with that effort. A part of that effort is to get a few hospitals, less than five, that are your index hospitals that are purchasing in advance. And so that's what our efforts have been there. Again, it's very small revenues, but that is our efforts in the UK.
And just to clarify, the number of units outside of the U.S., is that looks like it's around the 300 sort of mark. Is that right?
That would be close, yes. If you just do the simple math, that yes, you're very
okay.
Close. Yeah.
Okay, great. I just also wanted to get a comment. Historically, you've talked about some of your regions throughout the U.S. as being cash flow positive, like San Antonio and Atlanta. Just an update on any other jurisdictions that it might have turned cash flow positive?
Yeah, so we have 18 sales reps, and we're pleased that those 18 sales reps continue to increase the number of sales units. We have focused now on total revenue as an organization. We report total revenue and the growth of that as opposed to the individual territories because now they're all gaining more traction, and so we're pleased with the progress of all those territories, but we no longer comment on individual territories' perspective on cash flow positive, but it's in line with where we'd expect it to be, given the overall growth of the business.
Okay, and sorry, last one for me. Trying to get an understanding of what seasonality of sales might look like quarter to quarter, mainly asking it because of the change with your reliance on GPOs, does that influence seasonality and what can we sort of expect for third and fourth quarter in terms of how big they look relative to the four quarters of a year?
Yes, good question, Steve. So as you look at the four quarters of the year in cardiology, the quarter that actually has seasonality, and I will say it's a bit of seasonality, it's not a gigantic amount, is the third quarter. First and second don't have much, and the fourth does not have much. But the third does, and it's reflective of holiday season in the United States, and a lot of cardiologists take holidays during that time, not the whole quarter, of course, but during that time. Also, there is a very large meeting that takes place in that quarter also, the TCT. And so if there is seasonality, we do get a bit of it in the third quarter. Do I expect that it will suppress our growth rates? I expect that we will continue to deliver in excess of 15% quarter-on-quarter growth in the third quarter. So I don't expect it to, while it might have a slight impact, I don't expect it to have a major impact in our sales.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Matthias Smith, Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
G'day, Mike. How's things?
Very good, Matty.
Good. I just have a few very quick questions. In terms of the sales ramp up, what's the current gross margin that you're getting, the average gross margin you're getting on these products now?
Average gross margin, and when we say gross margin, what I'll include here is the touch labor and the actual cost of, or the actual manufacturing, the cost
yep.
of the product, not overhead.
Yep.
That's in excess of 55%.
Okay. And what I'm trying to get to is sort of figure out when these reps break even, you know, based on the average unit sales. So what's the average cost of sales personnel currently tracking at?
About $200,000 is the compensation, and then we add about 25% to that for expenses, all their expenses. So
okay, so around $250 US per annum per sales. The salesperson. And just the final question, is there anything sort of that you see on the horizon that's going to accelerate the sales growth, you know, sort of above the around 20% per quarter that it seems to be tracking? I know you've, you know, clearly the GPOs is important, international expansion, but I guess, you know, can you see something that's really going to put in a step change and maybe take it up to 30 or 40% per quarter?
Yeah, great question, Matty. So obviously growing at a rate of 15 to 20% per quarter is growing at an annual rate of 75 to 100% per year.
Yep.
So we feel very good about that kind of a growth rate in our industry. However, to your point, is there accelerators that we see? Yeah, the GPO strategy continues to drive for us acceleration. And another key thing with the GPO strategy is publications. And we've commented clearly in the past in our investor newsletter, as well as every time we get a publication, particularly when it's directly related to a GPO, those publications actually help us to accelerate. Publications that show acute kidney injury reduction as well as dye reduction. And then the other thing that I would also comment on, and we just made a press release on this on Friday, is that in the United States, President Trump last week announced a national initiative for the United States to focus on improving and reducing kidney damage and kidney disease in the United States. What impact could that have on Osprey? Well, for Osprey, We're the only company in the cardiac cath lab talking about and educating physicians and the hospital staff on the dangers of patients with poor kidney function that are having contrast media injected in their arteries and how that one event, that one 45-minute procedure can make their kidney function decline quite readily in that one 45-minute procedure. So we are right in alignment with what the executive order was spelling out, is that the U.S. Needs to focus on, healthcare system needs to focus on kidney damage and try and reduce kidney disease and kidney damage and reduce patients that progress in the chronic kidney disease scenario to dialysis. And so we're right in alignment with that. What activities could come out of that? Different payment models that penalize hospitals more severely for poor outcomes related to kidney, and that would have a dramatic effect on our business. So all of those we see as good potential accelerators for our business.
Okay, that's useful. I guess we always take any promises from your president with a grain of salt, though, of course. Okay, that's very helpful. Thanks very much, mate.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then zero on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Ian Hyde. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my questions and good morning, good evening. I have a couple that are flowing on from some of the questions that have already been asked, and in particular regarding changes in potential sales, and you mentioned that you've now got through Premier deal with their Quest hospitals. So do you feel that's because these hospitals are, shall we say, more keenly focused on health outcomes and cost reductions, that there would be, or you anticipate, an acceleration now that you have this arrangement with this group of hospitals?
Yeah, Ian, thanks for the question. And you are exactly right. As you look a little bit deeper into Premier, Premier's got, just to give a couple of points of education on Premier, Premier's got 4,000 hospitals that are under its banner in the United States. Now, not all 4,000 do heart procedures. About half of those do heart procedures. So there's 2,000 that do hearts that are under Premier. Now, within Premier, there's a variety of different levels of participation that a hospital can choose. And the most committed group is called Quest. And we've made a press release on this Quest group. When I say committed, what they get is they get a lot of coaching and direction from Premier and analytics from Premier that show all different areas of quality improvement and how they can continue to drive their costs down while improving the quality of care that's given to all the patients. So it is the most committed group. There's roughly 200 of those hospitals. And what we've done is we've taken the burden of illness study, which we've commented on in the past. It was a publication that Premier put out after they looked at how much does AKI cost in their system. And what they're able to do is they're able to now give that on a specific hospital level basis to each of the Quest members. And that's roughly about 200 of the Quest members. They're able to give them their specific hospital data on how much is how much is AKI costing them specifically, how often does it happen, and what is the burden of illness for their specific hospital. Clearly, that is an enormous sales tool for our sales organization. We don't get that information. That information's private. But knowing we do know the 200 hospitals that are Quest, and knowing that they have access to this information is huge for us. Right prior to the Quest program, we had about five hospitals, Quest hospitals already buying from us. So it represents just a gigantic opportunity for us to focus on those hospitals who now clearly know how big the problem is in their hospital and how much it's costing them.
Okay, thanks. And following on from that, since, I know it's only early days, but has there been any traction from Quest Hospital? So if any of the new ones, because the quarter we've gone from 140 to 147 buying and testing or I can't remember the right word, but from 20 to 26, are any of those Quest, or have you had an increase in interest from those Quest hospitals yet to date?
Yeah, about a good question. So, yes, there are some of the new hospitals that work Quest. It's early days. We just announced the Quest program, but there are a couple of those that work Quest. And then in the pipeline, about 25% of the hospitals that are in the pipeline are Quest.
With that, do you anticipate in a step change also in time from initiating testing to becoming fully fledged buyers from Quest? Because I know from non-GPO hospitals to GPO, it was basically cut it in half. And do you envisage that even reducing further?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'll give you, it's early days, so I can't support this with evidence, but I'll give you, what's the company's view of Quest? Clearly, we're directing every sales rep in our organization has Quest hospitals. And we're clearly directing those sales reps to go to those Quest hospitals because there's such bold tools now to show each hospital exactly how big this problem is. So we are clearly putting a big push on Quest hospitals. What do we expect to get out of that? Well, I think first and foremost, the time to market, the time to customer acquisition will be shorter with Quest. Traditional time for customer acquisition is about 4 months. That 4 months is from sample all the way to purchase. We think that will be shorter with Quest hospitals because of the evidence that they have at their disposal. I can't prove that yet because I don't have enough of it, but we believe that that will be an impact. The other impact that we think we'll have is because the hospital is sensitive and aware of exactly how much it's costing, AKI is costing them, they'll be able to share that with the doctors, and that would drive adoption faster. So the adoption curve, once you're approved in the hospital, the adoption by all doctors can happen faster. And so those are two things we expect to see in the Quest hospitals. I don't have enough experience yet to be able to prove that, but that's what we expect.
Sure, okay. And further to that as well, the peak or the best improved AKA reduction from those presentations from the University Health System and Metropolitan Methodist Hospital, are any of those doctors or hospitals in groups or part of Quest or any other type of arrangement as well? Because they're a very strong number, so to use a non-medical term, it would seem the world's biggest non-brainer, that would facilitate a huge amount of change in view and traction.
Yes, all four of the hospitals we've previously noted with AKI reduction presentations are in GPOs, all four of them. Now, specifically one is at Quest also.
Okay. And then another angle of that, other companies I've got money with, they work on getting guidelines from peak bodies to set up standard treatment protocols like the NCCN for cancer. Is there some sort of similar body in any way, shape that can be accessed or dealt with for what you guys do?
Yes, there is. So the National Kidney Foundation, actually I'm glad you asked that question. So the National Kidney Foundation and the Society of Cardiac Interventions, so that's kind of the kidney side and the heart side, have announced that they're going to have a joint symposium in the first quarter of 2020. And that joint symposium is to talk about all of the literature that exists around contrast-induced acute kidney injury and what is the best demonstrated practices for that for reducing that problem, and also coming out with guidelines, new guidelines that are aimed at curbing that problem. Certainly some of that is going to be reflective of the executive order and the new compensation methods that are probably going to be attached to that. So that's part of the reason why that's certainly going to be part of the agenda will be dedicated to that. And so we do expect continued activity from the societies, and we do see activity of joint societies getting together and forming new joint guidelines, which is obviously powerful when you have a kidney group and the heart group getting together to talk about the guidelines.
Sure. And finally, just in the news, whether you mentioned that second-year sales with existing accounts seem to have a step change in traction as well. Can you provide any further comments around that? And also, is there any way at some point you can get out the level of penetration with existing accounts and looking at or to give people information as to say, all right, with the existing hospitals, you can still get sales and still go up like another in total 100% or what have you?
Yeah, so good question. And I didn't hear the first part, but I think most of it was related to market penetration. As we look at the 18 sales territories that we have, what does the market penetration look like and what's the upside look like as we continue looking forward? You know, I would comment a couple of things on this, and this is simple math, is if you consider that the United States, if we take out Europe out of this for the time being, you consider the United States only, and you look at U.S. Patients that have chronic kidney disease that are entering the cardiac cath lab. So again, I'm focusing just on the bad kidney patients. That's our audience who we focus on that are entering the cardiac cath lab in the U.S. That's about 800,000 per year. So that's about how many procedures that is 800,000 per year of just the bad kidneys. So if you look at what our sales were in the quarter in terms of total number of units, that's about a 1% penetration level of the available market. Certainly we have quite a bit of opportunity to continue to penetrate. Does that mean that all of our territories are at 1%? No, of course not. We have some that are very high penetration levels in the accounts that are open. We have other accounts that aren't even open that we don't have any penetration in. So that's the quest of our sales reps on a daily basis, is to make sure that we're talking about our products and introducing our products because we're focused on protecting patients with bad kidneys from the harmful effects of dye and doing that as rapidly as possible.
Sure. And so just finally, you also mentioned that the rate of AKI has gone up quite a bit in the last 5 years, particularly from that Premier study. Is that basically due to demographic change in population as people get older, fatter and unhealthier? There's a higher level of bad kidney function, which by definition then could mean that the market itself, that the numbers you just talked about are going to increase and therefore obviously a bigger market for the products?
Yeah, I think there's a really good question on why is AKI growing so rapidly? And you've seen it in the publications that we have put out. Well, they're not even ours. They're the ones that Premier put out, and then also peer-reviewed scientific journal articles from physicians talk about how big this problem is, and it's a rising problem. Shocking how fast it is rising. Why is it rising? There are three primary drivers for it. You're exactly right, fatter and more sedentary, and baby boomers. So kind of that whole demographic is one of the reasons. So we've got more and more patients that are getting to 70 years of age, and as that continues to grow, you're going to have more chronic kidney disease, and the obesity and diabetes epidemics worldwide, and certainly in the United States, is contributing toward that. So that's one, is the demographics. A second reason is the procedure technology. The technology to treat these patients with bad coronary disease continues to get better, and patients that is treated today, 5 years ago, might not have been treated because the technology wasn't good enough to treat them, and they may have gone on for medical management or surgery. And the outcomes are generally better with percutaneous procedures than they are with surgery. So that's a good thing for the population, but it does have unintended consequences like further kidney damage. So that's the second, is the technology is better, and they're treating more people. And then the third driver of this would be that the healthcare system continues to look at ways to treat patients in a more economical way, and certainly angiography and stenting is more economical than surgery or lifetime medical management. So those are some of the reasons why that continues to grow.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Ian Moore. Please go ahead.
Oh, good day, Mike. My question was on cash burn, so that's been addressed. But just while you're there, the one other question. You mentioned when Matthias asked you about the cost per rep, $200,000, what are the clinical assistants? What do they get paid?
Yeah, the clinical specialists, they get paid about $130,000 in compensation. And then we add about 25% to that. So you're looking at about 160 for those people total.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm done.
You bet. Thanks, Ian.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Sally Watson, Oblique Logic. Go ahead, please.
Sally?
Yep.
Did you have a question? This is Mike McCormick.
Sorry. Hi, Michael. Sorry. I'm just traveling, so I had some difficulty hearing for a second there. Just a quick question on orphaning the products that are maybe a bit older and contracting manufacture for those. Can you give us some color on whether any of the older products are looking at retirement or contraction of manufacturing?
Yeah, good question, Sally. So I think I understand the question. It was, what do we do about the older legacy products as we continue to manufacture? How do we look at those? So, the Divert Easy is the seventh generation product that we've come out with. And I think that's always critical for medical device companies to listen to the customer and find out how do we make it faster, simpler, and safer and easier to use for the staff and for the doctors. And so that's what those seven products all do, the same thing. It's just making it faster, simpler, safer. So where do we stand on those seven products? We actually commercialize two of those products right now. That would be the Divert Plus and the Divert Plus EZ. The other five products have already been obsoleted. So your question is there manufacturing opportunities in other places for those? There could be, but I will say that those two products, they share a lot of components with about 90% of the components are the same for the two products, and about 10% are different. So we still get tremendous operating leverage by running both on the same line. because so many of the components are shared.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mike. That's all I had, really. The other questions have pretty much covered everything I was interested in.
Thanks, Sally.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. McCormick for closing remarks.
I'd like to thank everybody for participating in today's call, and we look forward to giving you updates, certainly when we finish Q3, and in between, in the next month and a half, we will have an update with our half-yearly results. So thanks, everybody, very much for the call.